Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Wall Street Unspun. Live every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Show can be heard on my website at www.europac.net. Also on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz on shortwave every Wednesday evening. Anyway, the number to call toll-free with your comments or questions, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. As far as any upcoming appearances are concerned, I am tentatively planning on attending the Money Show in Orlando. I haven't finalized that, but I'm relatively sure that I will be there, and that's going to be in February, I think February 6th, 7th, and 8th, something like that, down in Orlando, Florida. That's the only recent nearby media appearance that I have planned. Also, you know, I did that Bloomberg show for an hour last week. Unfortunately, I do not think it is up on the website yet. The guy that is supposed to record my shows for some reason missed this show. I don't know how he did it. It was a very good show. I was on for an entire hour. Got a lot of good stuff in. Somebody did post an excerpt from it on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube and you search my name and you look at recent, you can see a clip of it. And the person who put it up there basically says you can watch the entire one-hour interview on his website. I forget the name of the site, but it's on the YouTube version. So you can go to that site and you can watch that video. Hopefully we'll have it up on our site eventually, but it is not up there yet. Anyway, you know, a lot of stuff has been happening again in the markets. Probably the most, relevant to our clients is we're continuing to see weakness in some of our stocks. Not all of our stocks. Some of the Asian stocks are doing very well. The Hong Kong stocks, the Singapore stocks. The ones that seem to be doing the weakest right now are Canadian stocks. I mean, they're kind of getting hammered across the board, particularly the energy trusts, even the gold stocks down there. Even as gold is hanging out around $800 an ounce, the gold stocks are coming into a lot of selling pressure. I think there's a lot of redemptions and hedge fund liquidations up in the Canadian market, and so that's temporarily suppressing some of these stocks. Also, a lot of the European REITs and Asian REITs have been weak. Anything real estate related, even though it's, commercial real estate in Asia and Europe seems very far removed from residential real estate here in the U.S., but there's just been a lot of selling around the world, and I know a number of clients, again, have called up nervous, wanting to sell their stocks, and, you know, generally these are some of the newer clients. You know, they haven't experienced some of these ups and downs, and some of the clients that have been here for many, many years have certainly seen the value of the account rise and fall. But over time, you know, the trend is clearly higher. But for new people that experience a drop and all of a sudden their stocks are down 10% and, you know, they think they have conservative investments and they think that, well, maybe there's something wrong. Nothing's wrong. They are conservative investments. You know, it's not that hard for your stocks to be down 10%, especially if we're charging you 2 to 3% to buy them. And then, you know, you get the currency go down 3 or 4%, the stocks go down 3 or 4%, and there's 10%. So it's not that difficult to see a 10% drop, but it doesn't change anything about our strategy. Our strategy is still intact, and the fact that the stocks might go down doesn't impact our clients in a negative way because we're buying these stocks to hold them and collect the dividends. And the dividends, you know, with a few exceptions, a couple of Canadian trusts have cut their dividends. Some of them actually have raised their dividends recently. But by and large, most of our stocks are not cutting their dividends. The dividends are there. And so if we bought these stocks to hold them, to have our wealth outside the dollar, and if temporarily due to market conditions, some of the stocks decline in current market value, What difference does it make? I mean, we weren't going to sell them anyway, even if they had gone up in value. We would not be cashing in, so it really doesn't matter. You know, the price of the stock is only relevant on 2 days, the day you buy it and the day you sell it. In between that time, the only thing that counts is the dividends. And as long as we're getting a portfolio of good dividends, and more importantly, non-dollar dividends, you know, the better. But, you know, the problem is, and some people have the temptation, oh, let me go to cash. Well, first of all, you can't go to the dollar because the dollar is doomed for sure. But I don't necessarily think that people should go to other currencies, the euro or the yen or, you know, other currencies, because central banks all around the world are debasing their money supply. Look what the ECB did this week with a 500 billion euro or dollars worth of euro injection of new reserves. I mean, that's a lot of inflation being created by the ECB. They haven't cut interest rates, but they're still increasing money supply. And so currencies around the world are losing value. The problem is the dollar is going to lose value the fastest. Our problems are the most acute. We're the nation with a gaping trade deficit, current account deficit. We're the ones that have, basically cannibalized our manufacturing infrastructure. We have no more domestic savings. We are in the worst shape. That's why I'm investing abroad. But because I'm cognizant of the risks of paper currencies in general, that's the reason that I've chosen to own assets in other countries and not simply their paper. That's why we're buying real things, you know, utilities and pipelines and refineries and commodity reserves and property trusts, because I don't trust any of the paper currencies. But I understand that we're in the worst shape, and in the final analysis, when everything hits the fan, the realignment is going to be Americans get a lot poorer and American assets lose value relative to foreign assets. We've been living beyond our means. That's all going to change. Our currency is going to lose value relative to other currencies. There's no way around that. But the best thing to do is to own assets in countries that are going to gain wealth, not in America, which is going to lose wealth, because you want to own assets in wealthier countries because you'll get a more meaningful return. And that's the key. That's why these portfolios make so much sense. And ultimately, you know, what's going to happen is America is going to be a much poorer country, unfortunately. We can't do anything about that. But, you know, right now a lot of Americans, you know, when they retire, they find that the cost of living in America is very high. And they take their dollars and they go down to Latin America or something and they live pretty well. Well, in a few years, we're not going to have to do that. If you're an American and you're smart enough to get your money out of the dollar now, you'll be able to retire in a poor country and not leave the United States because you'll be living in one. And if you have your money in foreign assets, then, you know, you're going to be like a European or an Asian who retires in America because the cost of living is a lot lower here because our money has been debased. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that we're going to be a dirt poor third world nation, but we're certainly going to be a lot poorer than we are today on a relative basis, which means if you can maintain your wealth by getting it out of the dollar now, you'll be able to live a much more comfortable lifestyle in the United States than you could. Now, of course, that could all change if the politics change, right? If the government of this country becomes ultra-oppressive based on how bad the economy is, if the government of our country actually tries to seize or confiscate the wealth of those citizens who were smart enough not to go broke, well, then, you know, this all goes out the window. So I'm kind of assuming that that's not going to happen. And I don't know, maybe that's just the optimist in me. And maybe I'm being a little bit Pollyannic myself, giving too much credit to our government and not to steal our assets. But assuming they don't do that, this is the best strategy. But you don't want to be distracted or you don't want to lose confidence in what we're doing based on short-term fluctuations. Don't worry if your account goes down in dollar value. Who cares what your account is worth in dollars anyway? Because in the final analysis, who knows what the dollar is going to be worth? You know, people think, oh, no, you know, I gave you $500,000 and now it's worth $450,000. I better sell. I don't want to lose any more. Well, if you sell and you take $450,000 and put them in the bank, you're going to go broke because those $450,000 are going to lose a lot of value. So don't even think about in the short term, what is my account worth in dollars? Just look at what you own. I got 10,000 shares of this. I got 5,000 shares of that. You know, that's what you own. And that doesn't change. It doesn't matter what's written on that brokerage statement. You know, just as if the stocks had gone up, you know, it doesn't change. And again, maybe I mentioned this last week, but a lot of people got brokerage statements with very high numbers in 1999 and 2000. But of course, those statements are meaningless. you know, people can dig up those old statements and say, hey, look, I had an account at Merrill Lynch full of internet stocks, and it was worth $3 million in January of 2000. Here's my old statement. Well, what good is that statement now? If you're still holding those stocks, you know, doesn't matter what that statement said if you didn't sell. Same thing, you know, you get a statement this month from Euro Pacific Capital, and your account's down 10%. Is it going to matter 5 years from now that it was down 10% if you didn't sell? No, it doesn't make a difference. Down 10%, up 10%, down 20%, up 20%. It's all noise. None of it's going to matter. You just have to understand how this game is going to end. And, you know, the portfolios that we are building basically constitute the winning hand, right? These are the hands that are going to win. And, you know, in the short run, you just don't want to fold it. You don't want to get, you know, bluffed out of the game because you think the hand's going to lose. The hands are winners. I understand how this whole thing is going to end up. I don't know the exact path that we're going to get there. I mean, if I could figure that out, I wouldn't even need clients. I wouldn't need to be doing a radio show. I mean, there's no way I can be that smart. But I do understand the big picture. I understand in the final analysis where it's all going to be, how it's all going to end up. And so all we can do is position our portfolios to win in the end. And the bottom line is that's what counts, being the winner at the end. Right, there's no prizes, you know, when you play a baseball game, it doesn't matter who's ahead, you know, at the fifth inning, you know, none of that matters. It matters who's got the highest score at the end of the game. And, you know, that's all that's going to count in investments, you know. It's who's going to have the money at the end. And, you know, the middle's just noise. Anyway, let me take a look and see what we've got in the caller queue. Not too many calls, actually. In fact, I think I had one caller who dropped off, and so that means there are no callers, if I'm correct. So anyway, let me give out the number again. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. That's a little odd, because normally we get quite a few calls without me even giving the number. Maybe I got the one caller back online. Is Kevin there from Ohio?
Right, this is me.
Hey, Kevin, go ahead.
Okay.
You're on the air, Kevin. Go ahead, ask your question.
Oh, hi, Peter. Yes, thank you. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the stability of South Africa and if gold investments in South Africa are secure from confiscation.
Who knows? You know, I own quite a few South African gold stocks myself. That's really all I own down there are some mining stocks, and they haven't been performing very well. I mean, there's been a couple that have, but in general, some have been pretty weak performers. And one of the reasons for that is the problems with the labor down there and worries about the government. So I don't know. You know, I'm hopeful that that doesn't happen in South Africa. And certainly a lot of the assets there have been discounted, and their prices are low. To, you know, to kind of compensate people for the risk that there might be some type of political event that might cause a loss of you know, some of your ownership. But I don't know. I mean, my thinking is that it's not going to be, you know, something where the government comes in and physically takes the asset away from you. But certainly with taxes and with requirements, with certain minority ownerships of companies and things like that, that there always is some political risk. The question is that fully reflected in the price of the stocks, or are the stocks underestimating that political risk? It's hard to say.
Right. I mean, we move our money abroad to escape inflation, which is confiscation, but then we have the risk of, you know, what countries do we trust?
Well, sure. Well, look, you have that risk in America, too. The U.S. government is one of the country governments that I also don't trust. But, you know, most of the money that we invest for our clients is very well diversified geographically. We generally invest in maybe a dozen different developed countries. And, you know, so the odds of all those countries going communist, you know, when they're far from it right now, I think are pretty slim. Even the odds of any one of them doing that are pretty slim. So, you know, I think, you know, we diversify as best we can. You know, there's not much we can do. And just try to make safe investments in countries that we believe the governments are not going to seize our assets.
Okay, well, great. Well, that's my question. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. And the lines are still open. You know, I had an interesting argument, or I tried to get into an argument, a couple of them on Fox. Recently on Fox Business. One of them yesterday was regarding inflation and food. And, of course, I tried to point out that, you know, that a growing economy doesn't cause food prices to rise. In fact, a growing economy causes food prices to fall. I said, food prices are rising because of inflation, not economic growth. And this woman, I forget her name, was screaming how wrong I was and that, no, it's, I don't know what I'm talking about. It's because of all the economic growth around the world. You know, people are eating more, and so food prices are rising. And, you know, this is a common misconception out there that higher prices are the trade-off for economic growth. They're not. In fact, it's the opposite. I point this out in my book. That's why economic growth is a good thing, because it lowers prices. Because when you have legitimate economic growth, what's driving it is increased production, right? You're producing more stuff, including producing more food. Farmers become more productive, and they grow more food. Certainly the farmers in China today are far more productive than the farmers were 20 years ago in China. They're producing a lot more food, you know, per acre than they did at a lot lower cost. And that's one of the reasons that a growing economy is such a positive thing, because it reduces the cost of living. If economic growth caused the cost of living to rise, then why would we want it? You know, but they're just so confused. I mean, the fact of the matter is food prices should be going down because of all the economic growth. The reason they're going up is because the governments around the world are printing so much money. That's increasing demand faster than growth is increasing supply, and so prices are rising. Another interesting debate I had today, you know, had to do with the Constitution, where we were talking about, the mileage standards, the CAFE standards, where the government comes in and says to the automakers, your cars have to get a certain, you know, miles per gallon. And I mentioned something about it, but then I opened up another can of worms by saying, look, in the second place or in the first place, the government simply has no constitutional authority to legislate fuel efficiency. That how many miles to the gallon a car gets is not up to the government to determine. It's up to the free market. It's up to consumers and producers to decide what kind of cars they want to make and what kind of cars they want to buy. It's not up to the government to dictate to Americans, you know, what the fuel efficiency needs to be on their automobiles. And, of course, everybody jumped all over me and screamed that, you know, Mike Norman, of course, who really can't agree with anything I say, is saying, well, how can it be unconstitutional? The government does it. If the government passes the law, then it's constitutional. Basically, according to Mike Norman, whatever they do is constitutional as long as they pass the law. You know, and I try to explain, look, the Constitution was written to prevent this from happening. Now, I'm not going to disagree with Mike that the government doesn't do all sorts of things that are in violation of the Constitution. And just because they violate the Constitution in other things doesn't mean it's okay to violate it all the time, or because they violate it so routinely that somehow what they're doing is constitutional. It's not. But certainly the government is not, the courts are not enforcing the Constitution. Then it was funny, David Asman said, well, that's ridiculous. How could it be unconstitutional? He said there's nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government can't set automobile standards. And then I tried to explain to David Asman, I said, well, Dave, that's not how the Constitution was written. It doesn't have to give the government, it doesn't have to deny powers to the federal government. It has to grant them those powers. They only have the powers that are granted. And, of course, obviously, you know, the Constitution is not going to say something about automobiles because they didn't exist. That was his point. So, and I said, well, it doesn't matter. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the government can tell you how much hay to feed your horses. It's not up to the federal government to do that. Now, if the state governments want to do that, well, the state governments can, because there's nothing in the Constitution that says the states can't do it. So if individual states want to set standards, they can, you know, constitutionally. But I don't think they should. I mean, maybe they should have standards for emission controls, and certainly some states that are very congested might want to reduce their emissions, but certainly other states that are very, you know, densely populated, I mean, they have no problems with emissions, and, you know, they necessarily don't have to have cars that don't pollute because they don't have a lot of pollution. But none of this is a federal issue. It is all a state issue. But of course, very few people out there seem to understand that the Constitution was written to impose limits on the federal government. It's not there to impose limits on Americans. We have freedoms. It's there to protect Americans from government and limit the power of the government. But today, people think the government does whatever the hell it wants. Anyway, I know I got one more caller on, but let me take a quick break commercial, and we will pick it back up. And the lines are open, 888-678-9597, if you have a call.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, and we are back. And the number to call toll-free, once again, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And let's go to Jim from Texas. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, this is Jim. On my computer screen right now, I've got today's Jim Poplavich, Chris and Jim Poplava Financial Sense wrap-up for today. And a chart listing money supply growth rates, and it lists about 30 countries, and it's year over year. And some of the worst countries, Ukraine, year over year, money supply has increased 48%. Russia, 41%.
Yes, we know that. We know that money supply is growing dramatically all around the world.
Wait, let me finish. Down at the other end, the United States is only 6%.
Well, it's not 6%. Money supply here is growing more like 15%. But it just shows you how weak the dollar is, that even though other countries are creating money even faster, that the dollar is still falling. And the problem is supply. Even though we're not creating new dollars as fast as some of the other countries, there are already such an abundance of dollars in circulation that nobody wants. That's the problem. There are trillions of dollars around the world that nobody wants. We've been exporting dollars for years and years and years so that the supply of dollars is dramatic. And as the demand for dollars is going down, that causes the dollar to lose value. Even if we stop printing them at this point, even if we weren't printing any, the dollar would still collapse because we don't have enough demand for our dollars because we have an enormous trade deficit and we're not producing enough goods for the world to use their dollars on. Other countries that are printing money are at least producing goods, and there's real demand for those dollars. But yes, there is massive global inflation, and that's why we don't recommend that you put all your money in foreign currencies or foreign bonds. That's why I recommend foreign dividend-paying conservative stocks, because they give you a hedge against global inflation.
Okay, good answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. And I've got a new client on the line, Steve from Massachusetts. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Peter. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
Great. I'm very excited to be with your firm now. Just opened a new account. And I guess my question for you was, I'm a guy. I'm in my late 20s. I almost own my home outright. I got about $20,000 left to pay off. And the house is, I bought it for about $170,000, and it's still worth that, according to the market research that I've seen, the real estate research. My dream is to retire as young as possible, and I'm wondering what kind of asset base would I need with you folks to make that a reality?
Well, I mean, that all depends on how you want to retire, what kind of living standard you need. I mean, you're very young right now, so you've obviously got a lot of time to work. If I were you, I would still try to sell the house and rent and try to take that cash and invest it abroad. Worst case scenario, rather than having a fully paid up home, you know, I'd rather have a home that was leveraged. If I can borrow it 30 years at 6.25% or something, 6.5%, and invest that money abroad, I think that's a wise move to make. But I mean, you know, it's, you know, you got to decide for yourself. But you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, you got to just start working and saving your money, but just don't. Unfortunately, you can't save it in U.S. dollars because you'll never retire doing that. It's like, you know, you're running forwards, but you're on a treadmill going the other way.
That's a great point. I mean, so, my whole thing is, I feel like I've made on one hand, buying the house back for, you know, a very, very low 3-year ARM. On one hand, I got a very low rate, and I paid off most of my house during that 3 years, so in that sense, it was wise. On the other hand, I feel like I've been putting everything I've been earning into this house, which is pretty much losing when you think about it. It's the same value, but over 3 years, it's the same as it was.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of...
What's going on with houses
now?
You know, I put this article on my website. I would encourage everybody to read it. It was from the Sacramento Bee. No, the Modesto Bee. And it's courthouse step auctions offer 1,336 properties in foreclosure. This is in three counties in Northern California, in Modesto, Merced, and Stockton.
How many was that?
It's in the B.
Wow.
On my website. They auctioned off 1,336 houses. But the amazing part is only 17 of them were bought. 17. That's not even 1%. Or
auction prices were
over 1% of the houses got sold. Despite the fact that the banks were offering to sell them for 40% below the mortgages. And so there's a couple of houses that were sold and there's some that weren't sold. And they go over, like they interviewed one guy, and he bought a house that had a $537,000 mortgage on it, and he bought it for $235,000.
Hmm.
You know, and who knows what the person who had that mortgage paid for the house, right? Because theoretically, when he bought it, at least, it must have been worth a little bit, unless he put zero down, right? It was worth something more than $537,000.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is amazing that even though these houses are, you know, being offered at 40% or 50% below, you know, what they theoretically were worth, nobody wants them.
Yeah.
And what the writer of the article concludes is that, well, there's all these bargains out there. People are just not taking advantage of them. And my conclusion is they're not bargains. If they were bargains, they would be being bought.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reality is, yes, they're 40% below these crazy prices that might have existed, but they're not 40% below reality. They still might be 10 or 20% overpriced, even at a 40% off. And so people are looking around, what is my house worth? Who knows? Who knows? Try to sell it.
Okay.
Because here are these banks trying to sell these houses, and nobody will buy them. 99% of these houses are not getting bought, and I'm sure that there are people who are living right next door to these houses who think their houses are worth 40 or 50% more than these houses that aren't even selling.
Would you even say that
people haven't even come to conclusions yet?
Would you say that would even carry over to a small starter home in a rural area?
All real estate is going to go down. Now, it's certainly, look, there are certain parts of the country where real estate is not going to go down as much as other parts. There's no question about it that real estate in Las Vegas or San Francisco or Newport Beach or Miami or, you know, those places, Phoenix, you know, houses are going to fall a lot more than Des Moines, Iowa, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in general, real estate is going to go down. Mortgage rates are going to go up for everybody. It's going to be more expensive for people in Iowa to borrow money to buy a house, just like people in California. And so as mortgage credit dries up, as down payments are higher required, as people, you know, it's going to price more and more people out of markets. And so there's going to be downward pressure on real estate prices. Now, you know, maybe there'll be some communities where that might be the case. If somebody, you know, you discover gold in a community and a bunch of people rush in there to mine it, you know, so in certain pockets of the country, real estate might actually appreciate based on demographics and based on population shifts. But that's going to be at the expense of real estate someplace else that goes down even more as people are leaving that area to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, as an asset class, U.S. real estate is going to lose a lot of value, and so there's no reason to tie up a lot of money in it. You know, I don't own any real estate here. I'm renting, and I don't feel any urgency to buy anything. You know, I think it would be nice to own a house, but then, you know, I got, you know, the house right now, my heater isn't working, and so what do? I bug my landlord. You got to fix this thing. I don't have to fix it myself.
I've been shoveling most of the last 4 days, so I hear you.
Yeah, so I make my landlord do that stuff because it's his problem, not mine. I get to enjoy the house, and he has all the headaches because he doesn't live in it. Yes, you say he has the pride of ownership, but sometimes the pride of ownership isn't that fun when all you're doing is fixing and maintaining it and paying for things that go wrong, especially when you don't even live in the property. I live in the property, and I know that, you know, if he bought this house 2 or 3 years ago, there's no way my rent pays his mortgage. It's just not even possible.
Yeah.
And it's possible that my landlord has an arm. He has an adjustable rate mortgage. And maybe it's set to go even higher in a year or two. God. You know, and so if I'm not even covering his nut now, imagine what's going to happen then. So, I mean, for now, to me, I don't want to tie my money up here. And people keep saying, well, and I tell people what I pay in rent, and they say, oh, my God, how can you throw all that money away in rent? But they would think nothing if I bought the house and my mortgage payment was three times that. They wouldn't say, well, how can you throw away all that money on interest and taxes and maintenance? You know, it's not throwing it away. I get a place to live. Now, some people are going to say, but you have nothing to show for all that rent. Well, yes, I do. Number one, I got a great place to live. I got that. But number two, all the money I saved, the money I didn't spend on maintenance and taxes and interest, all that money got invested in things that are appreciating and paying dividends, not a depreciating house. Because houses depreciate. I'm using this house. I'm walking on the floors, right? You know, I'm wearing things out. I'm using appliances. I mean, they're losing value. Meanwhile, I take the money I save by not paying a mortgage, and I invest it in assets around the world that are appreciating and giving me dividends.
Okay.
Now, at some point, I think there is a psychological, I think there is some benefits to owning things and owning assets. I mean, I own my boat. I mean, economically, it doesn't make sense. I mean, no, I'm throwing money away, but I do psychologically enjoy owning it. Now, the thing is, houses are a lot more expensive than boats, and so I don't want to throw away that much money. But at some point, I'm going to buy a house. In fact, I might buy three or four of them. I don't know. But when I buy them, they're going to be really cheap, and I'm going to get a good deal. I'm not going to pay through the nose to have one, not when I can rent plenty of them, for a much, much lower level. You know, I can be patient. I'll wait until, you know, houses are attractively priced, and then I'll buy them. In the meantime, I'd rather invest in these foreign stocks that I think are much better values.
Great. I have one more quick question for you, Peter, and that is my 401k is entirely in funds that are comprised of foreign stocks. One that comes to mind is I have a lot of money in an Oppenheimer fund, and it's been getting killed the last couple of weeks. And I wondered if you had any outlook on sort of index funds. I don't know what you folks offer.
Well, look, everything is going down. I mean, I don't know what your definition of killed is, but I mean,
12% down.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I have a client's accounts that are down 10%. You know, it's been a pretty. Now we had a huge move up, you know, prior to that, but you know, everything is going down right now. I mean, that's all I can say is
hang in there.
Stocks are going down, but I don't know what's in that particular fund, you know, what kind of stocks they have. A lot of these international funds have a lot of high PE stocks, have a lot of non-yielding stocks, have a lot of stocks that do a lot of business in the United States. So you've got to build a portfolio. That's why I like to do it myself, because I don't trust somebody else to buy stocks for me. I want to buy them myself because I know the kind of industries I want. I know what my macro big picture theme is, and I want a portfolio that reflects that. And when I do that, and when I know what I own, and I'm getting good dividends, I don't get nervous when stock prices go down, because I know what I own. And I'd rather own it than own the currency that it's going down against, because in the end, I know that currency could be worth practically nothing.
Right. Hey, Peter, thanks so much.
Sure thing.
Bye.
Welcome aboard. And I've got Michael on the line from Washington.
Hey, Peter, how are you doing?
I am okay. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. We're a Europac customer, and we've been really happy with it. It's gone down, it goes up, it goes down, but we just ride it, and it always seems to go back up.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife wants a poster of you, autographed. You got one? She wants to put it on the wall.
Well, I don't have any posters, you know, but, you know, maybe you'd have to try to blow up one of the pictures of me on the Internet.
Dude, you got to have a poster.
Oh, there is. Yeah, that might be interesting to have a you know, Dr. Doom or a Peter Schiff kind of.
That's right, and you should send one to Kudlow. Hey, anyway, Peter, my question is, we're from California. My wife is, this is killing her up here in Washington because it's so, you know, rains all the time. She wants to go back to California, and what she wants to do is buy a house when the houses start to come back down to reality. Not now, but when they come down. Like when
I tell you, if you want to go down there now, you can rent a house. I mean, there are so many empty homes in California to rent. You can get some great deals on rentals for single-family homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rents for apartments have been rising, okay, and they've been rising. You know, and so you're talking, if you're trying to rent an apartment for $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, those rents are going up. But if you're willing to pay $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month, you can rent a fantastic house that would, you know, And they're out there. There are a lot of single-family homes. There are some brand-new homes, brand-new, never even lived in.
Right. Well, we're not in that price range. We got to rent for around $2,000 a month.
Yeah, well, I don't know how. In that lower end, I'm really not as familiar with it. I mean, there might be some small houses, single-family homes that are renting. But, you know, I never really looked into that market, so I don't really know it.
I
have a friend of mine, actually, who works in the Newport Beach office. And they're renting a house. They've been renting it for several years. I think they pay about $5,000 a month for their rent.
What's his name?
Kathoria.
What's his name?
He's in the Newport Beach office.
Is he a drummer?
Huh?
Is he a drummer?
No, he's not a drummer. But I'm saying the house that he's renting in, for at least a year or so that he rented, a year or two, it was, you know, he was paying rent to the landlord. The landlord finally sold the house, and I think he sold it for $4 or $5 million. And now the new owners are planning on remodeling it at some time, but they're still letting, Heyman live there. And if you look at the kind of rent that he's paying to live in a house that's supposedly worth $4 or $5 million, he pays $5,000. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, when this
for other, you know, it's a great place to rent.
Well, my concern is this: you know, with all of the economic turmoil that you feel lies ahead, with the devaluing of our currency and the economic problems that the entire country is going to go through, do you think California, because of their social economical problems, do you think that would be a good state to live? Would that be which place would be better to live, Washington or California?
Well, look, probably Washington. I mean, you could take a look at the weather and say, gee, you know, I'm getting all this rain in Washington.
Right.
But California is going to have a lot of problems because California is going to have a huge budget problem because real estate prices are going to collapse in California. That's going to exacerbate the problems because they're not going to get the property tax revenue they think. They're going to have to reassess these properties down. A lot of these homes that are in foreclosure, they're not going to collect anything in property taxes. And I think you're going to see, you know, you just saw a major downgrade today of a muni bond insurance company down to junk status. I think you're going to see more of that. I think interest rates are going to go up sharply for California paper. You know, they're going to be paying higher and higher interest to borrow money. The state is in some serious, serious trouble. Plus, if you look at California, California has one of the highest percentage of ARMs relative to mortgages. They've got huge jumbo loans in California. So they're going to be hit particularly hard by the real estate collapse because so much of the consumer economy in California centered around home equity and home equity extraction, jobs related to real estate, and the fact that so many people had adjustable-rate mortgages, so many people had extra income to spend, that is all going to go away. So California is going to be particularly hard hit. Its economy is going to be hit more than most, and they already have a lot of problems with high taxes and a lot of onerous regulations on businesses. So my thinking is you're going to see a lot of people trying to get out of that state.
That's what I've
and so, you know, I think that real estate in California is going to get so cheap that it's actually going to be cheaper than the national average. That is how cheap it's going to get, and that's never happened. I mean, California real estate has always been at a premium because of the weather and all that. But I think things are actually going to get so bad in California that, you know, a three-bedroom home on a quarter-acre land, you know, in California, will actually sell below the national average. Now, I mean, that is I don't think it's going to stay there. And I think that when that happens, California will be a good buy because I do think in the long run, California is a nice place to live. There are a lot of high-paying jobs that will be there. And so I think, in general, California real estate will be higher than the average. But I think because of the nature of these problems and how big this collapse is and how pendulums tend to swing, you know, they overshoot in each direction. And I think California real estate is going to be the cheapest it's ever been on a relative basis to real estate in other parts of this country.
Yeah, because we're from Orange County, and that's really high there.
Yeah, and look, the higher it is, the lower it's going to go. It's, you know, the bigger they are, the bigger they fall. And it's going to be a huge, huge decline. And, you know, people forget, but if you want to know what happens to real estate prices, in Japan, right, after their real estate bubble burst, property prices fell for about 12 years before bottoming out, and real estate prices declined by 70%, 7-0. So that means the guy that bought a house, you know, let's say in 1980, bought a house for $1 million. He pays the mortgage for 12 years, and in 1992, the house is worth $300,000. Now, if real estate can fall by 70% in Japan, where they didn't have adjustable rate mortgages, where people have a lot of savings, and where very few people were foreclosed on because it would have been a disgrace. I mean, you would lose face if you didn't pay your mortgage. So people felt compelled to save their honor to pay these mortgages anyway, right? Because they, you know, they could not repay their debts. That would be a shame on your household. You know, imagine what can happen in America. We're stiffing somebody as the national pastime. You know, hey, you get, I mean, people would think you're some kind of sucker if you paid off, you know. So, I mean, nobody's going to have any qualms about, you know, walking away from a house that's underwater, you know.
Right. So
I mean, and we have no domestic savings. So if real estate prices can fall 70% in Japan, they can at least do it in California, if not more.
Well, do you think the prices are going to, like, prices are going to drop down to, like, 1990, mid-1990 prices?
I think they will. The only way they won't, and of course there's no guarantees, the only way they won't is if the Federal Reserve creates so much inflation, which I, you know, and I wouldn't put it past them, that the nominal price declines are limited because of inflation. But in real terms, if they do that, in real terms, the declines will actually be greater. So if you want to take a look at it in terms of gold, gold is almost about $800 an ounce, and let's say a house is right now at $800,000, that house is worth 1,000 ounces of gold.
Right.
You know, I think that that house that's now costing 1,000 ounces of gold, by the time the market bottoms out, you might be able to buy it for 200 or 300 ounces of gold. You know, and so that's still a decline, even if the price in dollars doesn't change, even if the price in dollars goes up. Because if they create so many dollars, it's possible that the dollar loses value even faster than real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to lose value. There's no question about it.
So
one way or the other, you know, inflation can't change the reality. It can change people's perceptions of reality, but it doesn't alter what's happening.
Once the prices do collapse, and they have hit bottom, will it be okay to go there then, or do you think California's going to have?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I'm not writing California off, and I'm ultimately optimistic that we can turn this thing around. We're going to go through a lot of pain, and we're going to be a much poorer country, but you know. Countries have come back. You know, look at Japan. Look what they were like at the end of World War II. But, you know, they worked hard and they came back. I'm not saying that Americans don't have it in us. You know, I mean, we built this country up. Americans went across the California, you know, on covered wagons and had Indians shooting at them. I mean, we're not going to have to do something that bad. You know, so it's not that we can't rebuild this country. We can. I mean, and now, of course, we're going to need some help from government, like getting the hell out of the way. It would be nice if we could, you know, have Ron Paul as the president, and maybe he can have some influence on Congress. That would make the job a lot easier.
My wife has had Ron Paul signs in our yard for about, I don't know, like 14 months now.
You know, he was on Glenn Beck the other day for an hour.
Yeah, he's a
hopefully that gave him some good exposure.
An individual who actually understands the economy and the way our country should be run.
Yeah,
amazing. All right, Peter, I'll let you go.
Well, thanks for the call. Have you read my book?
I haven't read it. My wife has read it.
Oh, well, you got to get that copy from her. Better yet, buy another copy for yourself.
She reads it over and over, and she's bought books. She sent them to people in California. She sent one of them to my best friend, and he was just can't put the book down. He just loves it.
All right. Well, great. Well, write some reviews on Amazon if you haven't gone up there yet.
All right.
I think we're up to like 113 or 114 reviews. I want to see if we can get up to 200 reviews on there.
That sounds good.
5 stars. We need more. All right, thanks for the call. Hey, let's take a quick commercial break, the last one, and we will be back for more calls for the rest of the show.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, and we are back. And again, there's still maybe room for another caller or two. 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. I think we are Garrett in Georgia.
Yes, Peter. How are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you, Garrett?
Just fine. I enjoyed your book. Actually bought another copy today for my father as a Christmas gift.
Oh, great, great. Did you wrap it up?
Amazon. So if they wrapped it, they wrapped it. We'll see when it gets there. Enjoyed just listening to the discussion on the nominal versus real asset values in the real estate world. I actually am in the mortgage broker business myself. I have a couple of related questions to that. First one is, you know, down here in Georgia, we really haven't seen an asset bubble as much as you would in other states like Florida and California and then the Massachusetts area and whatnot. I am a believer that I think we're going to be heading into a more of a hyperinflationary mode. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. And I think that nominal prices may actually go up and real values come down. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, that could certainly happen. I mean, that's where the political pressure is going to be. And remember that America is a nation of debtors, okay? And the best friend to the debtor is inflation, because inflation enables him to keep his assets and screw his creditors. Creditors want sound money. Debtors want inflation.
Right.
Now, the way the dynamic is right now is all the debtors are in America, and all the creditors, or the majority of the creditors, are abroad. Now, for a politician, that's a very easy decision whose interest he's going to follow. The Americans vote. The foreigners don't. And so that's another dangerous position that I can't understand why more foreigners aren't looking at the political risk of having so much of our debt owned abroad with the political pressure to inflate it. Because if we create enough inflation, then Americans get to keep their over-leveraged assets, and we screw the creditors by giving them worthless money. If the government sticks to sound money, then Americans will lose their assets, and foreigners will scoop them up. You know, so in deflation, the debtors lose because they take all the assets. In inflation, the creditors lose because they keep the – I mean, the creditors lose because the debtors win because they keep their assets and they pay off their debts with worthless money.
Yeah, that's right. I've been encouraging my clients to not necessarily pay down their mortgage.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I
in the future.
That's what I told the caller. But what you don't want to do, I don't encourage people to go borrow money against their house and spend it. But, you know, interestingly, you know, I put another article up on my website, and this is a person who lived in California, and I forget the title, it was in the New York Times. And they lived in California, and they bought a house for like $450,000. They refinanced it a couple of times. And then I guess they got to the point they tried to sell it, they couldn't sell it. They had been paying off their credit card bills. So then what they did is, while their credit was still good, they went and they bought a house in Texas for $200,000. They were able to get another mortgage. Then after they did that, they refinanced the third time. They borrowed another couple of $100,000 off their house in California. Now they have an $850,000 mortgage on this house they bought for $400,000. They took some of that money, and they bought two brand new cars, and they took a family vacation in the Caribbean, and then they hightailed it down to Texas, and they abandoned that house, and they left it to the bank. Meanwhile, now they own a house in Texas, they got new cars, they got all this, and they stuck the creditors with an $800,000 mortgage. And who knows what that house can sell for? It's just basically abandoned right now, waiting to go into foreclosure.
All right. Follow-up question for you. In 2008, I think that we might see actually two different types of mortgage markets, one where, in essence, the haves and the have-nots, where the really prime borrowers are going to ride the wave of a political move by the Fed to ease rates even more.
Yeah.
Very few people will qualify for those because the guidelines are becoming very tight.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
We got about 10 minutes left, so I got one more caller on hold, so I don't think I have time to take any more calls, so I'll get to the last caller, and that'll be it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, the Fed is going to be – there's going to be immense political pressure on the Federal Reserve to continue to reduce interest rates and print money. I mean, there's no question about that. but it's not going to make anything better. You know, prices are going to keep rising. You know, food prices, energy prices, and ultimately what's going to happen is the world is going to, you know, cut us loose. And the Chinese and the Asians are going to float their currencies. They're going to let them rise much more spectacularly. And then you're going to see big increases in even the cost of goods that have been holding steady, like, you know, the imports from China and even consumer electronics. I mean, pretty soon we're going to start to see television sets and cell phones actually getting more expensive. You know, it's going to happen. And, you know, and it's going to be because of this inflation. But, yes, the politics are there because over the next couple of years, if the government didn't inflate massively, real estate prices will drop sharply and there will be a wave of foreclosures and people will not pay their mortgages. I mean, right now you've got about 7% of people who are behind in their mortgages. You know, a year from now, it could be 20 or 30%. 2 years from now, 50% or more, because people are not going to have incentives to pay these mortgages when the houses are worth less than the loans. They're just not going to, and especially if they have arms. And so the pressure is going to be intense. You know, it's just people don't understand how much of our phony economy has been based on spending home equity and how much has been based on the wealth effect or how much has been based on using teaser rates to temporarily reduce your mortgage expenditures to free up money for additional spending. I mean, people think it's an accident that we have a negative savings rate now. It's not an accident. It's because people didn't think they had to save because they owned homes. Well, when people realize that they made a mistake and they all of a sudden have to start saving again, they got to start saving twice as fast to make up for all the years that they didn't save. I mean, this is a huge collapse in consumer spending, and it's not going to get offset by a boost in exports because we don't make the products anymore to export. You know, we have a serious, serious recession coming, and the pressures are going to be intense, especially over the next year with the election coming up to do something. You know?
Right. I know you have one caller left. I have one final question. I'll run. Why don't more people understand, do you think, that inflation or devaluing the currency is truly a tax on the American public?
Oh.
And I hear the Republicans all the time, and I'm a lifelong Republican, but I hear them all the time, we won't raise taxes, but they won't bat an eye about running over to the Fed to inflate. And then the other thing that always baffles me, and I'll let you comment here at the end, is why is it that we...
I'm trying to tell you. You know, I mean, I mentioned that again today on Fox. You know, they always talk about, should the government cut taxes? Should we cut taxes? I said, look, the cost of government is not the tax. It's what it spends. And if they're going to cut taxes but keep spending the same amount of money, it doesn't benefit us. Government spending has to be paid for. And if it's not paid for legitimately through taxation, it's going to be paid for through inflation. They're going to debase the money, they're going to create new money and spend it, and they're going to rob our savings, they're going to rob the value of our paychecks, and it's going to cause prices to rise. So even though we might have a few extra dollars in our take-home pay, we're going to need those extra dollars to pay all the higher prices that resulted from the deficit spending in the way it was financed. And why more people don't understand this, I don't know. I guess they were brainwashed in American schools. I mean, our school systems teach all this crap. The conventional media propagates these myths, and people believe them. Look, I don't know. I mean, people in Salem 400 years ago were burning witches at the stake. I mean, people believe all kinds of crazy things. I don't know why they do it. It's just, you know, popular delusions of the madness of crowds. But, you know, not everybody is fooled. There's a small segment of us that don't buy into this nonsense, that understand what's really going on.
Right.
And we're the ones that are going to protect our wealth. And when everybody else is completely shell-shocked and broke, it's like, oh, my God, nobody could have predicted this. Well, there's going to be a few of us who did predict it. And, you know, maybe they'll think we were lucky or just, you know, but we weren't because we were thinking straight. They weren't.
All right. Pleasure speaking with you tonight.
But anyway, thanks for the call, Garrett.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And let me take the last call from Mark in California.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Good, Mark. How are you?
Good. Thanks for Crash Proof again. And I just wanted to get your comments on what's been going on down in Florida with their state fund for with their connections with Lehman Brothers and whatnot. I don't know if you read about that. And do you think that's going to spread?
You talking about where the state of the investment funds where they had a, you know, they were trying to pull their money out and then they had to freeze it because the assets were losing value or?
Yeah, and then the latest on that is that it was actually Lehman Brothers who sold them the derivatives, and it was they ran to Lehman Brothers to try and figure out what to do, And then there's all kinds of conflicts of interest.
Well, it's kind of maybe similar to what happened with Orange County and, you know, when Merrill Lynch, whoever sold them those products. But, yeah, you know, Wall Street is there selling all kinds of crap. And you know, and a lot of people that hold these things are going to get clobbered. There's going to be tremendous losses across the board. You know, and the reason is that Americans just simply borrowed money that they can't pay back. We have gone on a massive consumption binge, especially for the last 6 or 7 years, but we've been doing it for 20 years or more, but particularly since 2002. We've spent an unprecedented amount of money. We've borrowed trillions of dollars, and we can't pay it back. So somebody's going to lose. The people that lent us the money, that own the debts and the investment products securitized by this debt, are going to lose because Americans can't pay it back. I mean, what do you expect? When you loan money, when you loan somebody money to consume, how can they ever pay you back? They don't have any assets to pay you back. And so that was the mistake. So tremendous amounts of money are going to be lost. And it's either going to be lost legitimately or it's going to be lost through inflation. But either way, people who are holding on to U.S. dollar-denominated debt are going to take huge hits in the value of those assets. And, you know, there's no way around it.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people think they're going to retire on these assets. They're not. They're not, you know, retirement is just going to be something that people, you know, see in the movies or read about in books. At least for this next generation, it's people are not going to retire. They're just going to have to work.
Yeah. Do you see these state problems spreading in terms of, like, there'll be states defaulting and declaring bankruptcy like
sure.
that?
It's going to happen because the states can't print money. The municipalities can't print money. And if their tax base is eroded, if there's a lot of unemployment and they can't pay their pensions, they promise their retired teachers and the retired firemen and, you know, they're not, you know, there's going to be defaults. There's no question about it. You know, unless, of course, that there's just simply the Fed just simply accommodates it and prints a lot of money and gives it to the states under, you know, aid or bailouts. And of course, they bail everybody out with inflation. But, you know, but this is a tremendous economic catastrophe that we've created for ourselves. And the problem is we've already committed the sins. We've already done the damage. We've already borrowed and spent the money. So there's no way to fix it. You know, all we can do is deal with it and live with the consequences of our own actions. But, of course, our politicians don't want that. They don't want to fess up to it because they don't want, you know, to pull the wool away from their constituents' eyes. They want the constituents to reelect them, and they'll only do that if they think everything is good or if they're somehow going to be able to fix the problem, you know, with changes in interest rates or tax cuts. But it's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, it really turned out to be sort of a perfect storm, especially with the election coming next year.
But the problem is there's always an election. You know, there's elections every 2 years. So there's always an election. There's always a reason for a politician to do something foolish and irresponsible because they can't see past the next election. That's all they care about is, okay, I just got elected. Now how can I get elected again? What can I do? Oh, there's a major problem? Okay, how can I postpone it till I can get reelected one more time? That's all they care about, postponing it. You know, even if they make it worse, they don't care because they might not even be in office by then. So it'll be somebody else's problem.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, thanks for the call. I'm running into the last minute.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. Happy holidays.
Thanks to you. And I will be back again next Wednesday, which I think is, was that going to be right around Christmas or Christmas Eve? I'm not even sure. But I will be back here. In the meantime, if you haven't bought my book, Crash Proof, pick up a copy. Buy it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. Buy it in your bookstore. If you bought it and read it and liked it, put up a review. Meantime, tell your friends that they can listen to these shows on www.europac.net if they missed the live version. And call us if you haven't opened up an account with Euro Pacific Capital. What are you waiting for? We've had a pullback recently in our stuff. Great time to buy. Great time to add to your account. 800-727-7922 is the toll-free number to talk to a broker. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for those who called in. I'll be back again next week. So long and Merry Christmas.